Ulterior.
So, when I recorded last week's episode of this show, I very briefly mentioned the ongoing beef between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. And the reason that it was brief at that time was because only Euphoria by Kendrick had been released as the, series of diss songs in the rivalry. And I hadn't heard Euphoria yet at that time, but my understanding of it and what I saw on the show was that I had been told that Kendrick fucking bodied that man, and he did. Euphoria was excellent. And then there was 616 in LA. I almost said 666. Demon Time, Devil on the Brain. 616 in LA, which was just, another, like, what the fuck moment, what the fuck experience. Drake responded the next night with Family Matters. And in my mind, Drake puts out Family Matters, and he's like, "Yeah, that'll show them. Job well done. Go, team. Go, OVO. Woo." And then he's ready to go to bed, and then his team is just like blowing up his phone, barging on his door, being like, "Kendrick dropped, Kendrick dropped, Kendrick dropped." Because that's how it felt like for me. It felt like, I'm sitting here watching the fucking Clippers get their asses handed to them by the Mavericks, and then out of nowhere, Kendrick dropped again, Kendrick dropped again, and it's Meet the Grams. And it is one of the like most uncomfortable experiences I've ever had listening to a song, but also one of the coolest moments of my fandom for hip hop and probably music in general. And just seeing all of the reactions roll out online and just everybody be so blown away by the fact that this song dropped like half an hour or 40 minutes or whatever it was after Family Matters. It was a genuine shock to the system. And again, watching all the reactions, I was watching DJ Academics and Anthony Fantano's live streams. Ak is a fucking character, man. That dude is like kind of cringe and corny, but also he is a gold mine for tomfoolery. And this weekend really emphasized that for me because it wasn't just when Meet the Grams dropped. It was the next day when Not Like Us dropped and Ak was on stream and he was like, "I was about to go get the Henny." And then everybody's just telling him, like, "Kendrick dropped, Kendrick dropped, Kendrick dropped." And that's the same thing that happened on Twitter. Everybody just overreacting or reacting properly to another Kendrick dropped, and it's like at that point you're wondering, like, how does Drake even come back from this? Because up to that point he had already like very royally fucked up the hierarchy of what he should have been responding to, because he was very quick to address and deny the allegation of him having a hidden daughter, yet he said nothing about the allegations of him being a pedophile, which I feel like should have been like the number one thing that you would want to debunk. But he waited until dropping The Heart Part 6 on Sunday night while I'm at a fucking Eras show, by the way, so fuck that dude. And just very like such a blanket way of denouncing the allegations and not really giving any kind of proof, any kind of receipt to show that his team did in fact feed Kendrick fake information. Because if you do that and this guy's on the other end calling you a pedophile and a misogynist and all this other shit, that's a I don't know who in OVO is telling you to do these things, man, but it's not working. They ain't cooking, and neither are you, motherfucker. It's been a few days now by this point. I do not know where the beef is gonna go, what's gonna come of it. I don't know if it's over, if we're gonna get another Kendrick track, but whatever happens, at the very least, last week was monumental and I will never ever forget it. And not to the same extent, but in the same vein, there were some other scene events that I do not know if I will ever be able to forget, or at least in, the short term throughout the rest of the year, because there was some, or not some, there was a lot of discourse online, mainly Twitter, about a very specific topic that I will be getting into after I play the intro clip. So this episode might be like a little bit condensed and a little bit more of a strange format because I'm really focusing on this certain news topic for the episode, but we still have a couple of our singles, Yours Truly, Body Snatcher. There were some great tunes last week that I really want to mention, but there were no records, so this episode is going to be just singles and just a discussion about what was going on between Omerida and Wind Waker and everybody who had an opinion on the matter. thank you so much for listening. I really hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and yeah, stay tapped in, stay locked in. I forgot my own intro, man. Shout out anybody who got the $200 sleep token jacket, as well as the $40 single song vinyl for V Again by Bad Omens and Poppy. I see you out there hustling. I see you balling. I see you thugging it out. And good on you for supporting your fandom in whatever way you felt like it. And I say fandom because I feel like with this topic at hand, there's so much shit going on from, you know, various sectors of the online scene community and scene Twitter, and anybody who had something to say about this ordeal, they absolutely did say their piece. And you know, it's been a time. We'll put it that way. I'm gonna go ahead and get into it now, and this is centered around two bands, two songs, you know, a release announcement, and all that other kind of shit. So what's going to happen right now is I'm going to play clips of those two songs. The first one is going to be Charade by Omerta, and then Break the Rules by Wind Waker. So again, these are those two songs in that respective order. So I guess the proper place to start would be the album announcement by Wind Waker. So it was Thursday night when they dropped the music video for Break the Rules, and they subsequently announced their next album. It is going to be called Hyperviolence. I can't remember the release date. I believe it is in July. And the reason why the name being Hyperviolence is so important is because I feel like that is what initially got this on the radar of Omerta. So Omerta had a album recently called Hyperviolence, and I guess when they saw that Wind Waker was naming an album Hyperviolence, they probably instinctively had like this visceral reaction to the announcement. And what happened next was there was a tweet sent out by the Omerta account, and it was like a thesis statement, essentially, about what was so wrong with calling Wind Waker's album Hyperviolence. And there was another piece to Omerta's argument where they accused Wind Waker of having AI-generated artwork for Hyperviolence. And it spiraled into this very big talking point from Omerta about the state of modern metalcore and how so many bands are just churning out, you know, these very AI sounding songs, and how it's all boring and there's no like charge in the scene or whatever. And like, they're a band that is putting out like genuine art, violent art, as they put it. And that is like subsequently superior to what Wind Waker is doing and what any other band that falls into that section of metalcore could be doing right now. Essentially a call to the fan base, their fan base, to, you know, not support this kind of metalcore and support violent art, as they put it. Okay. I read the tweet, and I do understand what they're saying. I think the argument kind of, I don't want to say fell apart, but certain pieces of it started to be picked apart when Wind Waker responded to the tweet with a work in progress image of their artwork showing that it was not AI. This was genuine artwork that had so much time and effort put into it. And from that perspective, I totally understand Wind Waker responding with the sentence "cry about it" when putting up those work in progress images, because like, that's, you know, that's somebody's passion, that's somebody's livelihood, you know, computerized artwork. And for somebody to, you know, instantly call it AI and essentially try discrediting any like true bit of artistic expression that could be found within that artwork, that's not cool. Like, I will say that. But then the AI part of the argument was only like one bit of what Amerta was saying. And there was a bigger picture. And I think what Amerta was saying about like the state of metalcore, it's definitely a message that the like audience of theirs and their followers can definitely latch onto and be proud to represent, because Amerta does represent a like a type of like metalcore or hardcore subgenre right now that is definitely not ubiquitous. They do take chances. Their music is very abstract and abnormal, but it's abstract and abnormal in ways that I find to be charming. Their song last week called Charade, it actually was my favorite song of last week. It was number one in Scenic Overlook, which means that, you know, it will be a part of the Top 100 Song series come this December. And I was able to comfortably call Charade my favorite song last week because I really did connect with it more than anything else. I really did believe that it was the song from last week's lineup that jumped out at me right away, and in a bigger way than anybody else, because that song, it's fucking weird, and it's definitely like challenging the like system of metalcore, I guess that's one way to phrase it. And I like how it's very chaotic while being controlled. And it's not like, in my mind at least, it's not just a bunch of like glitch noises and weird hyper pop mixed together with like new metal. It's definitely like a real genuine piece of music that I was able to find captivating. And that's why it was so easy for me to call it my favorite song from last week. But it's not going to be for everybody. And I totally understand why somebody would hear Charade or any other Amerta song and feel like, you know, it is just a bunch of noises. It is very discombobulated. It is hard to understand. And I do not believe that, you know, finding Amerta's music difficult to comprehend, I don't think that makes anybody like lesser than or dumb or stupid. It just means that they have a different taste from the people who do enjoy Amerta. And the reason why I bring up that stance about, you know, somebody being stupid for not liking Amerta or being dumb is because that's actually a positioning that the band took on Twitter, as well as many of their fans. And you can see in, you know, the Twitter discourse that a lot of people were very, very, very passionate about expressing why they believe Amerta is like, you know, next level art, and why they're the future of the scene, and why this is the kind of music that everybody should be latching onto, and not Wind Waker or Wage War or fucking Bad Omens or whoever else it is in metalcore that people can perceive to be generic for whatever reason. And I think there are, at least in my mind, there are different ways to look at that response from the audience. I used the word passionate earlier. I think that is very prevalent here with the Amerta crowd. I think they're clearly passionate about not only this band, but, you know, this movement that they're pushing for, this kind of crazy, chaotic, and very original music by Amerta and so many other bands. There was this big tweet that Amerta made about violent art and tagging a lot of the bands that fit into their description of that, like Sea Space Cowboy, Foreign Hands, Johnny Boo, Static Dress, a lot of bands who I really, really fuck with and vibe with, and I'm glad that there is a section of music fans out there in the scene who are really championing that movement and championing the encouragement of art that is challenging to the crowd and is something that you can't hear on like Sirius XM Octane or find spread throughout Spotify suggested playlists. You know, like, I think that is a cool movement in and of itself. But you do lose a lot of effectiveness in your argument when your main argument is, oh, you're stupid. You know what I mean? Like, A very like specific example of this would be when Blake or Metalcore Cowboy, Metalcore Clown Boy, I believe he's known by people on Twitter as various aliases, but Metalcore Blake is what we'll go with right now. He was definitely on Wind Waker's side for this argument, and then he made a tweet, I believe it was Sunday, saying that he was trying to be open-minded and he gave Charade by Omerta a chant, but he couldn't connect with it, and to him it just sounded like a bunch of noises. And Omerta quote tweeted that tweet, and it was a gif of the character from the music video for Charade, and the caption of the gif says something like, OMG, are you R slur word? It doesn't actually say R slur word verbatim. It's actually the word that I'm choosing not to say right now. And I feel like you have to know what you're doing when you say that. And I feel like Omerta did. They understood that, you know, there would be people in their camp who found it funny, and then there'd be people opposing them who were like, oh my god, why are you using a slur? That's not cool. I hope you lose the C-Space Cowboy support slot. And again, that's coming from a place of passion. That's coming from a place of people who really believe that's not okay, and they believe that a lot of Omerta's social media antics over last week specifically have, you know, done a lot more harm than good to the band and their public image. I know there are definitely some bands out there like Fox Cult and Outline and Color who, you know, were pretty open on Twitter about not supporting this idea of Omerta being able to just kind of like, I guess, bully fans around and, you know, be so upfront and assertive with no sort of censorship on Twitter. And that really goes back to my point just now about like Omerta kind of having to know that when you do these things on Twitter, you will be pushing away people from potentially listening to your music, but at the same time, maybe those people that you're pushing away would have never really even been able to get into the music, and maybe the Wind Waker crowd who are so, you know, supportive of Wind Waker and supportive of their defense of the AI allegations, were they actually going to get into Omerta? Probably not. Whether that's, you know, a point that needs to be made or not, that's up to you guys to decide. I think Omerta, they're not really trying to, like, expand their fan base. They're trying to expand the minds of the people who already fuck with them. And I think, you know, in that sense, their tactics are definitely working. And maybe there's not really much for them to lose when it comes to being, you know, as much of a, like, terminally online persona as they portray on Twitter. And in that sense, I do say all of the power to Omerta and all the power to their fans. I don't have a dog in this fight because I really did enjoy both Charade and Break the Rules. I like so many of, or so much of, what Omerta would consider to be violent art. And then I also like a lot of what they would consider to be, you know, fabricated art that goes against the idea of their movement and what they see as being thriving points for the genre. And I personally don't really have an issue with the way that Omerta carry themselves on social media, but I do understand why somebody would take up, you know, any kind of an issue with that stuff. I guess, like, when it comes down to it, I didn't even mention Break the Rules, really, by Wind Waker. I think that song is amazing. I like it probably more than anything that was on the recent Wind Waker EP that I reviewed, except for maybe Sirens. I really do like that song, but Break the Rules has just such a catchy-ass chorus, and I was able to enjoy that song. I was able to enjoy Charade by Omerta, and that makes me a very boring, enjoy all music, fucking bubbly ass person, you know what I'm saying? And maybe both sides for the argument, you know, in support of Omerta and against them, would have some kind of a disdain for my mindset about that, but I just kind of think, like, there's so much music out there to love and appreciate, and I really do try to make it a point on this show to highlight as much as I can about what invigorates me in the scene today. And, you know, part of that invigoration is Omerta, part of it is Wind Waker, part of it is the violent art bands, a part of it is the Octane bands. There's just, like, so many sectors of the scene that I'm able to gravitate to, and I have a very open mind with this stuff. And for that reason, I, like I said, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't really care. I think some of it's funny, some of it's just like, okay, wrap it up now. But ultimately, I'm, you know, somebody who, I support the idea of Omerta, and I support them, pushing ahead their message however they want to, with the understanding on their end that what they do is going to push people away. But again, I don't think they really cared about those people to begin with, at least caring about like their fandom and their streams and whatever the fuck else, you know what I mean? Like what you like, do whatever you're gonna do, as long as it doesn't harm anybody. If you wanna rock with Omerta, rock with them. I'll be seeing them at the Sea Space Cowboy tour. If you rock with Wind Waker, then rock with them. I'll be seeing them on the North Lane headliner, coincidentally one day before the Sea Space Cowboy headliner with Omerta in the same venue. But yeah, that's kind of my whole stance on it, my very, very boring stance. All the love to Omerta, all the love to Wind Waker, all the love to anybody, you know, trying to pedestal what it is that they feel passionate about in the scene. Yeah, that's Omerta. That's Wind Waker. That is everything that went on with those bands. I'm going to go ahead and move on now because there are a couple of other bands who I wanted to make the time and the effort to highlight on this episode, because while there were no albums last week for me to discuss, there were plenty of singles I thought did an amazing job at delivering on the fronts that the band's meant to. The first one I want to mention is not by a band, actually, but Lizzie Farrell, her new single called Mad Hotel. If any of you guys are unfamiliar with Lizzie, she had an album back in 2020. It was called Bruise. It was released via Pure Noise Records, and it was one of the first pandemic albums I got to listen to. And for that reason, I have a lot of like really good and bad memories associated with that record. But ultimately, it's a connection that is probably stronger than like 85 or 90% of other records that I've been able to hear so far this decade. Bruise was just like imprinted on me in a way, not to like be a Bruise pun, but hopefully you guys know what I'm trying to say. So when it comes to this new single, Mad Hotel, stylistically, it's quite different from what she was doing on Bruise, because Bruise was a lot of like really like, it had like a lot of brooding dark pop energy going for it. Whereas Mad Hotel, it's done, I guess, similarly, but in a more chaotic structure. Like, there's a lot of drum and bass elements going on here. It's pretty powerful in the instrumentation. It's a lot heavier than what was happening on Bruise. And it's the kind of song that lets me see and shows me. I was getting those phrasings mixed up, and that's why I said shh. It let me see and show me the versatility by Lizzie, and how whatever sound this woman is going for, she's going to nail it. And I have that added level of trust with her now when it comes to this next era of her career because of what Mad Hotel managed to do for me. Let's talk about Yours Truly and their new single, Sour. This is part of what we now know as Yours Truly's new album called Toxic. It's out August 16th, so I believe as of right now, that is like the furthest out that a release date for the scene goes. And even though it's quite a bit of time away, my anticipation level for Toxic is about as high as it could be for Yours Truly, because like, you know, admittedly, this was a band who a couple of years ago I thought were good, but I had yet to like fully be blown away by them. No matter how much I liked Circles or High Hopes or fucking Siamese Soul, like there was still something missing to Yours Truly. And I think when it came to the 2022 EP, Is This What I Look Like, they not only found everything they needed, but they found what other bands similar to them are missing in terms of that execution and delivery and just being able to be, you know, that energetic pop rock band that I feel like they were always destined to be. And Sour is another layer to that lore for Yours Truly. And it's really a song that I think when you mix this with Call My Name, which is our single a couple months ago, you get like a really good and clear picture for what this album is going to be going for. And it's a lot more of, you know, what I've grown to love about Yours Truly and what makes them one of the standout bands from not just the Australia scene, but the scene altogether. So a lot of really exciting times ahead for Yours Truly, and I hope the fan base feels the same. Four in Hand's got a brand new fucking banger out. This is Horror Domain. As I mentioned on an earlier episode of this show, Four in Hands have a new album out June 21st called What's Left Unsaid, and Horror Domain is the latest entry into the singles rollout, and one of the best so far, truly. I feel like, you know, even though there haven't been that many, I think Horror Domain is something that I'm able to find a lot of solace in for, you know, the heavier ends of Four in Hands, as well as the more melodic ones. And I'm going to circle back to something I mentioned earlier about Armerta and, you know, their rally for violent art. Four in Hands is a band who is doing that tremendously well, and in my mind, like, in the top echelon, in the top percentile for bands that have, you know, that kind of cadence to their identity and their sound and everything about them. Four in Hands, I've said it for years now, I believe, like, they are the future. They are one of the bands pushing those ideas ahead in some of the most effective manners I've ever seen. And when What's Left Unsaid is out June 21st, I really fucking hope, and I better see you guys and everybody else out there in the scene spaces on Twitter and TikTok and anywhere else guessing at Four in Hands, because they truly have made this mantle all themselves. We have a double single for the home team and details for their new album. The singles are Roommates and Overtime. The album is going to be called The Crucible of Life, and it is dropping on July 12th via Thriller Records. The home team feel like the band right now who everything is just going right for them. I think they have the right songs, the right backing from the label and the audiences. Just the right place, right time. The home team, like, when it comes to the you know, the discourse about bands who can potentially break out in the same ways as, like, Bad Omens and Sleep Token and Spirit Box, the home team have a real case for being there. I truly believe this is a band that can have necks at the snap of a fucking finger. And Roommates and Overtime just kind of emphasize what it is about this band that works so well. Roommates is a little bit of, not a slower song, but at least in the initial verse, it's a little bit more methodical in its pacing as compared to Overtime, which is very, like, go, 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 and upbeat and high octane the entire way through. And I feel like I kind of prefer that sound for Roommates just a little bit, at least in comparison to, or, you know, complimentary to what we've gotten from, like, Hell and Brag and Loud. It reminds me a little bit of FOMO, which was the single off of the Slow Bloom Deluxe Edition back in 2022. And whenever the home team do something like that, I feel like they're at the top of the game, top of the seed hierarchy. And just everything about this band right now is clicking, and I'm very interested and excited to see if what I've been saying about this band having, you know, that next up trajectory is going to pan out, because I don't see any reason why it would not. House of Protection. This is an interesting one, and I'll explain why. This debut single by them called It's Supposed to Hurt. So this is a brand new project made up of ex-Fever 333 members, Ark and Steven, And when I heard about this song, the very first thing that was said to me, I guess maybe as like a selling point, was that it was produced by Jordan Fish, formerly of Bring Me the Horizon. And that like really piqued my interest because I was like, okay, like you take members of Fever who, you know, Jordan is familiar with and has worked with before, and you get them on a song. I'm like, okay, what is this going to sound like? Like, what is going to be the crux of this single? And then I hear It's Supposed to Hurt, and it's got like this very like vibrant and energetic 90s flair. It's very like Prodigy in that regard. And I haven't been able to pull myself away from this song. I only rated it or ranked it at like 7 or 8 for Scenic Overlook, which is the weekly top 10 rankings that I do. This easily moves up. This easily is a song that I'm just crazy about right now, head over heels for. I feel like it achieves everything that, like, you know, you'd expect members of Fever and that sort of like angst and like outburst energy to really bring. And I don't know if this song is meant to be a diss towards Jason Allen Butler, the singer of Fever, but lyrically, it's got that kind of aggression to it, you know? It feels like that kind of a song. If it's not, then, you know, I'm way off base and I apologize, but it's just hard to kind of see it as anything else. And I am a huge fan of what Ark and Steven did for this song, or with this song, and Jordan's production is just next level. This clicked. Like, this, it was instantly a hit with myself. I hope it was a hit with anybody out there who, you know, got to hear this song and kind of branch off from any like fandom for Fever or Bring Me or The Chariot or anybody else, or anybody else mix in with like the related acts to the single. It's Supposed to Hurt is fucking amazing, and I'm just increasingly a fan of it every single day. I'm not sure how many of you guys, if any at all, are tapped in on a band called Conversation, but they had a new single last week called Broken Bottles that just immediately, like, you know, took me for a spin. They had an album back in 2022 called Honesty that I was very late to. I didn't discover it until 2023, so, you know, there was no opening for me to talk about it for 2022 or award season or whatever, and it would have made some splashes. Like, I ended up becoming a really big fan of that record, and having the chance now to talk about them, like, I jumped at that, and Broken Bottles was so easy for me to get into. If anybody out there is like into early Don Broco, like Priorities era, or Mallory Knox, or Young Guns, this song kind of has like, you know, a similar energy going for it. Very like, you know, upbeat post-hardcore alternative rock mixture type of shit. And I feel like Broken Bottles checks off every box that I would ask to be checked for when it comes to, you know, having bands navigate that kind of a sound to what it is that I like and my taste and all that sort of shit. Broken Bottles is just very catchy, energetic, vibrant. I love it so much. My cat Armin right now will not stop meowing. I don't know if you guys hear him, but he loves the song very much so too. I was just ultimately very, very happy with Broken Bottles. The final single for the episode that I want to mention is by Body Snatcher. It is called Human Disdain. This is a part of the EP Vile Conduct, and I might have, you know, these details misconstrued, so if I do, somebody feel free to correct me. I think Vile Conduct was already released on vinyl as part of Record Store Day, and it's going to be released in full digitally on September 3rd. And again, if that's incorrect, then just tell me I'm stupid or whatever. There's been a couple singles so far off Vile Conduct on digital, which is, you know, those are the ones that I'm able to hear. Human Disdain is just fucking apoplectic and so, like, the perfect heavy song for right now. And I think like the kind of chaos that Body Snatcher brings with them is something that, you know, you can hear in bands like Spite and Kublai Khan, but I don't want to say Body Snatcher is better than any of them because I don't even know if that's the case. But I think whenever I hear new Body Snatcher, like if I ever forget how good they are, they're immediately like thrust back into the conversation every single time. And it's like, you know, this like bash to my head of like, hey, Body Snatcher exists. Body Snatcher is that fucking band. And they really might be that fucking band. I think Human Disdain just like spells out all that for them. Anybody who has been able to hear Vile Conduct by now, I would imagine the entire track list, you know, is very like it hits the point or hammers the point in like in those instances. And I do need to see more flowers out there be given to Body Snatcher, myself included, you know, because I don't do a good enough job on this show of really highlighting and gassing them up and like letting you guys know that if you're looking for something very aggressive and anthemic, you can find everything you're looking for within Body Snatcher. These were the remaining singles from last week that I gave either a 4 or a 5 to in the reviews on social media. Cut Me, Crave Me by Ammonia, Drowned Eyes by Curveless, Fear by Gravemind featuring Jamie Hales of Polaris, Siege Lord by Harriet, So Obvious by Internet Friends, Kill the Girl by Lolo, Resolve That Was Nice by Notions, Veilwalker by Our Hollow, Our Home, Near Haven by Paleskin, Charged by Sleep Talk, Fuck the Bad Vibes by Solence, Real Life Love by Speed, Brave New World by Starset, Wish It On You by Voila and Aviva, and Become One by Wilt Wither featuring Carson Pace of the Callous Dowboys. So those are all the singles, and that's actually it now. Like I said, there was no album or EP last week that I reviewed, so this episode was just predicated on singles and the extended conversation I wanted to have about Amerta and Wind Waker and Violent Art and anything else within that argument. And I want to say this now. There's been a like halt to the social media content for TikTok and Instagram Reels, and I'm just going to be really upfront and truthful with you guys. I do not know how long that is going to last. I would say don't expect a video soon or anytime soon. I have some stuff going on, and I'm doing what I can to like navigate through it and, you know, make it through it for that matter. And that kind of has to be like put on like the back burner for right now. I wish that wasn't the case because I really do enjoy that content. I enjoy, you know, you guys and anybody else out there having the chance to kind of like see my facial expressions and mannerisms when I talk about this stuff, because I feel like, or at least I would hope that my passion for this music, you know, is like receptible through a screen. But like I said, there's just stuff going on right now that it's not really possible for me to dedicate the time to it. So just thug it out with me. We'll get through it. And at some point in the future, the videos will be back and they will be better than they've ever been. Better video quality, better backdrop, better audio quality. We're going to make this shit work. And I hope you guys stick with me for that. Thank you for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And as always, for the love of the game, let's make a scene.